Now for the disclaimer. After class, you are to immediately go and pick up your children. You can fellowship down the hall as you go pick up your children. Then you are to come back in here and leave room for your middle schoolers. Okay? Good. Okay, second disclaimer. We do not have the video today. I knew it. Just get over it. Life is tough. I was not able to make the connection to get in the video this week. I was supposed to get it from Sunny Sessions, so if y'all want to blame it on him, it's my fault, but blame it on him. But we just weren't able to do that. So what we did is I've moved week 4 of the Existence of God piece into week 3. And next week we'll go back, circle back and talk about design and look at a film. I don't guess they call them films anymore, do they? DVD, yeah. We'll look at a movie on DVD about the existence of God. So if you will turn in your Bibles to Habakkuk chapter 1, verses 1 through 5. Habakkuk. Now Habakkuk is in the Old Testament. It is 5 books from the end. So if you go to Malachi and go 5 books back, you should be in Habakkuk. And you pronounce Habakkuk like you say tobacco. It's not Habakkuk. It's not Habakkuk. It's Habakkuk like tobacco. And what we're going to talk about today, I want to introduce this way. This is what I believe is the main argument that someone who's an atheist or an agnostic or a deist will come back to you and say, here's why I really believe God does not exist, or I don't know if God exists, or I believe God has nothing to do with the world once He created it. And that is the problem of evil, the existence of evil. And most people who have a problem with God, they have not philosophically thought this thing out and have a problem with Him. They have not scientifically gotten the evidence. It all comes back to, I see this, or this happened to me when I was younger, or this happened to me when I believed in God. And at that point, I got upset, hurt, whatever, and I started thinking that God does not exist. Every atheist thing I've ever read always brings it up. They'll talk about da-da-da-da-da, and they'll go back to the same thing. You remember the guy we talked about 2 weeks ago, Richard Dawkins, who's written the book that's very well, The God Delusion? That's his basic argument throughout that book. He talks about all this stuff and basically comes back to stuff like the Inquisition and things like that by the Catholic Church prove that God does not exist. So just so you'll know, that's always, everyone I've encountered, it always comes back down to that. And that's why I want us to talk about it, because I think this is the thing you'll end up facing more than someone wanting to know what the ontological argument means, which we talked about last week, but probably most of you forgot about. Habakkuk chapter 1. The oracle that Habakkuk the prophet received. How long, O Lord, must I call for help, that you do not listen? Or cry out to you violence, that you do not save? Why do you make me look at injustice? Why do you tolerate wrong? Destruction and violence are before me. There's strife and conflict abounds. Therefore, the law is paralyzed, and justice never prevails. The wicked hem in the righteous, so that justice is perverted. And that is Habakkuk's complaint. He's saying all this evil is going on in the world, going on in Judah particularly. God, why do you tolerate it? Okay? And the Lord's answer was, look at the nations and watch and be utterly amazed, for I'm going to do something in your days that you would not believe even if it were told to you. And Habakkuk is just like people today. They have the same problem. Why do all these bad things go on, God, and you seem to be missing? And this is like, we're like permeated with this. In television, movies, novels, it's all brought up. How many of you like Stephen King? This permeates every Stephen King novel. Just look for it. Permeates every one of his novels. That God does not exist, or God is asleep at the switch because of all the bad things going on in the world. How many of you remember The West Wing, the television program? This was a common theme that ran through The West Wing television program. One of the classic scenes in The West Wing program I remember, I didn't watch it very often, I remember this one. It's when his administrative assistant mentor died in a car wreck. And had the big funeral. Everybody remember this? And after the big funeral, the president walks back into the church, to the National Cathedral, and has a fight with God about why God didn't do anything about it and that he wasn't going to believe in God anymore. Now, if you don't remember that one, how many of you saw Cool Hand Luke? Remember Cool Hand Luke? Cool Hand Luke, the end of the movie. Paul Newman character is in the church. He's asking God, "Where are you because of all the bad things going on to me?" And see, this just permeates people's thinking. And after a while, people get thinking, all these bad things going on, God does not exist. And so we draw this conclusion here that the existence of God and the existence of evil cannot coincide. They can't live with each other. So one of them has to be true, one of them has to be false. But I want to tell you this morning, both of these exist in our world. And both of these can exist beside each other, and it does not lessen who God is one single bit. God is all powerful, God is all loving, God is all knowing, and evil exists. Now, an atheist or an agnostic will tell you those things can't coexist. Yes, they can. They do not cancel each other out. Uh-oh. Problem. Larry. Help me. Oh, that's not good. When your tech guy looks back and he goes, that's never good. So let's talk. Oh, there we go. Nice. Did I do something? Huh? Yeah, there it is. Okay. Oh, no one. You go off?
Now we're okay.
All right. Thank you, Larry. John. There we go. Okay. So here's the argument that the atheist will make. If evil exists, then God does not exist. Evil exists, therefore God does not exist. That's a logically correct argument. It's not true, but it is in correct form. And so the onus of proof for the atheist is to prove number one. We don't have a disagreement with the first one, do we? So he's got to prove this. We agree with this one. He has to prove this one, that those do not coexist. And that's what we're going to talk about this morning. Okay, let's talk about different types of evil. What is perceived as evil in the world? Now, when I use the word evil, I thought, what's the best word to use? And I thought this is kind of a word that encompasses a whole bunch of things. First of all, natural calamities. You know, we look at things like hurricanes, that's a tornado, in case you can't tell. And this is a result of an earthquake in Mexico. We look at things like hurricanes, tornadoes, earthquakes, and we say, why did God not stop that? Why did God create a world where these sort of things happen? Now, you really have to go beyond that if you want to ask that question. You have to say, so why did God create second law of thermodynamics? Why did God create gravity? Why did God create weather? See what I'm saying? It's a little bigger issue. Or why did God create weather so when all these elements come together in a perfect storm, you, for example, get a hurricane like this? Why didn't He make the weather system so it wouldn't do that? A lot of people ask that question. Why did He make gravity so that if a building falls, like something happens, that buildings don't fall? Why did He just not? And you got to ask questions, though, also like this. So God should have gravity part of the time and He shouldn't have gravity the rest of the time? So the same water that is used for so much play and relaxation should not be the same water that drowns somebody? Should, when somebody thinks they're going to drown, they get water and water becomes a rubber ball? See, there are lots of things you've got to think about here when we start saying God didn't create weather in the right way. Or God didn't create elements in the correct way. Okay? That's one question. Natural calamities. Another one is animal pain. That's another type of what is described as evil. You and I may think, what? I get that. But this is brought up time and time again in a lot of writings by atheists and agnostics. That if God really was God, why did He let animals suffer? This right here is a picture of a... can y'all see that? Yeah, it's a lion chasing a baboon. I didn't have it on there and catching him and eating him because I thought that might disturb you. Okay? And no one wants to see that, right? I don't want to see that. And this over here is one of the protesters at one of the lab testing place where they do animal research, which we hear that in Atlanta all the time. What lab is that? Yeah, the lab where they have, yeah, the one... Yeah, the one attached to Emory, is that correct? Okay, yeah. A lot of people see animal pain and they think that proves to them that God does not exist. In fact, I wrote this article, I did my master's paper on this guy whose name was Bertrand Russell. And he wrote this book entitled, Why I Am Not a Christian. He was an atheist. He wrote a book entitled, Why I Am Not a Christian. So I did my master's paper on this. And Bertrand Russell said that he knew Jesus was not the Son of God because Jesus never, ever, if He was the Son of God and who He said He was, He never would allow all those thousands of pigs to run down into the water. He was very serious about it. That if Jesus was kind, why did He kill all these pigs and make them suffer and take away people's income? And he thought that was a big thing to him. This guy was one of the leading atheists in the world before he passed away. That was a big thing to him. So people think that way. And the reason I'm saying this is to, I don't want you to minimize at all when somebody brings something up like this, that you minimize it and think, well, that's ridiculous to think that. That's how people think. And we need to be sensitive to that, but we need to answer it. Okay? 1 Peter 3:15, right? You answer, give a reason for hope that is in you yet with gentleness and respect. Okay? Okay, so animal pain. Another type of suffering, and this is the one we think about the most, is, or one of the two, is human suffering, man's inhumanity to man. This is a picture of Adolf Hitler. Okay? And I think when a lot of things I've read, when people think about man's inhumanity to man, they think about Hitler, and they think about the Holocaust. They think about Auschwitz and Bergen-Belsen and Dachau. Where in the world was God when 6 million Jews died in those gas chambers? That is a defining moment in the history of Judaism. From that point on, many, many Jews never believed in God again, and neither had their children, their grandchildren, and their great-grandchildren. From that point on. It all changed that day, or that time when that happened. But why did God allow this to happen? This is a big argument with atheists about the Holocaust. It really did happen. Why did God allow it? Human suffering. Injustices against men. Now, originally, I'm probably going to get... I don't know what I'm going to do about this. Y'all help me out if you will. I went and found a picture of a KKK recruiting poster. And I put it up here, right here. And Christy said, I think that'd be too disturbing. Get it off of there. Just write KKK, which I did, because I didn't want anybody to be disturbed by it. Unfortunately, I went to this site where I copied it from, and I'm thinking I'm going to start getting all this literature from the KKK now. After I did, I thought, oh no. I think they got a recruit. I'm not. Okay? I'm just saying that may happen. So if I go into witness protection program anytime soon, y'all know what happened. But you have all kinds of injustices in the world. Things such as this, the KKK, which is obvious, all the way down to, and this is the hateful Ford Taurus plant that closed. The most productive plant in the Ford Motor System. The most successful plant in the Ford Motor Company System. And when they decide to close all the plants, they close this one. Like number one. Why? Don't you think all those people thought there was some great injustice on that? You know that was disturbing. So we see injustice in the world running from this all the way down to something like this. And this will cause people to disbelieve in God. This will cause people to disbelieve in God. Even though we think this might not, it does. So we need to know the answers to this. Human suffering or physical pain. From someone getting a broken leg and walking around on crutches and not knowing why it happened to them, to someone in a cancer ward dying, not knowing why that had to happen to me. As probably most of you know, it's been diagnosed in the last month that my mother-in-law has leukemia. And she, this past week, has just... Monday, she's totally different than she was yesterday. And you know, those questions have come through my mind. Why is this woman who's 86 years old, who has these, everybody in her family lives to be 90-something years old, and she's lived a great life, she has taken care of herself physically, and just contracts leukemia out of nowhere. And her brother, who's been smoking, has emphysema, has to have a mask, basically he would smoke through a tube in his throat if he could, continues to live. And you go, what is the fairness in that? You know, someone who doesn't care very much about God, someone who loves God deeply, what is the deal here? People want to know those questions, answer those questions. You've asked that yourself, I bet. Just by the simple question, I could go back and grace, why? Why is this happening to me? Why does it seem that some people get overloaded with pain and suffering? And some people don't have hardly any at all. You know, those are big questions. And so when those things happen, people come back and they say, okay, where is God in all this? In fact, there's one guy who said that one instance of pain in the world disproves God. Just one instance. Because if God were God, He would never allow us to suffer at all. Now, you may not agree with that, and I don't agree with that, but that's what people really think. So how do we respond to all these things? Now, let me say this before we continue. I keep talking about these seminars I want us to have. I want to create one where we devote an entire weekend or entire Saturday to talking about this. Because we're just going to hit this very high level today. Because there are lots of questions you have to ask. You want to ask, you want to answer with people, you want to answer maybe for yourselves. So we can't touch on all those today, but we'll touch on the ones we can. But hopefully, Lord willing, we'll be able to have something to where we can just have a whole seminar on the problem of human suffering and evil, because I think it's very important. Okay, we're going to talk about two things right now. We're going to talk about, first of all, we're going to talk about free will. The second thing we're going to talk about is the world the ideal place? Number one, we're going to talk about free will. Number two, we're going to talk about, is the world the ideal place? Under number one, free will, we're going to talk about the love of God and the power of God. And number two, I'm sorry, the love of God and the knowledge of God. And number two, we talk about, is the world the ideal place? We're going to talk about the love of God. Did I say that right? Knowledge, power, and then love. Yeah, that's correct. Okay, so just kind of remember that. The free will. Now, you can write this down and impress all your friends with this. When you use the word ontological, then you can use this word too, because it's pretty impressive. Omniscience does not preclude freedom of will. Everybody know what omniscience is? Yeah, what? All-knowing. Yeah, it just says, God being all-knowing does not preclude freedom of will. If you'll turn in your Bibles to Acts chapter 17, I want us to look there. Acts chapter 17, and we're going to read verses 26 through 28. And the reason I brought this up, because a lot of people say, if God were God, if God is who He says He is, and He knows what's going to happen, He could stop it. If He knows if we were going to make bad choices, then He could stop them. Why in the world did He even give us free will to make these bad? Why did He give Hitler free will? Why did He give the guy who did the stuff over in Cambodia after the Vietnam War, why did He give Pol Pot, was that his name? Why did He give him free will? Why did He give the guy who started the KKK free will to start all that up? Why did He not take his free will away? See, those are questions people want to... Because if God could stop this stuff, why didn't He do it? Okay? Acts chapter 17, you'll get a little insight into the way God created the world. Paul's preaching to a group of what? Atheists. Epicureans and Stoics were atheists for various reasons, but they were basically atheists. So he's preaching to them. And he brings up this point in a very subtle way. Starting in verse 26. From one man, talking about God, the unknown God, they didn't know anything about, He made every nation of men so that they should inhabit the whole earth, and He determined the time set for them in the exact places where they should live. Now, we know that verse, but look at verse 27. God did this so that men would seek Him. Now, I want you to underline this word. And perhaps, circle that. Underline it, whatever you want to do. Highlight it. And perhaps reach out and find Him, though He is not far from each of us. Now, what I know this is saying is that when God created the world and created mankind, God is up here at the top. Satan and the things of the world are down here on the bottom. And God stuck man right in the middle. He put him into what's called, what you can hear, you read this, think about it. It's called the epistemic distance. The epistemic distance, another word, right in the middle. So that perhaps He would reach out for us, we would reach out for Him and find Him. He did not overwhelm us with His presence, so our free will would be taken away. He did not overwhelm us with Satan's presence, so our free will would be taken away. He put us right in the middle so we could freely choose which way we would go. And that is God. Because God does not force Himself on anybody. And God does not allow Satan to force Himself on anybody. That's why the whole thing about Job in the beginning, that's why He set the whole thing up with Job in the beginning. He said, you can do everything to him, but kill him. Eventually He said, kill him. Why? He wanted Job to stay at a distance where Job could go one way or the other, but it was all up to Job. And so that's what this is. We talk about Acts chapter 17. We're talking about a distance where God set us up where we can freely choose Him or freely reject Him. You say, well, I wish He would have put me up at a place where I would freely choose Him most of the time. No, you don't wish that. Because God does not want you to pick Him because you don't have any other choice. He wants you to pick Him out of love, out of response, because that's what you really, really want. Now, you may not like that, but that is the way it is. So, the free will of man. So, we move on to the next slide, I believe. Oh, hitting the wrong one. Nope, wrong one. Back it up here. Okay. In fact, I think I got the slides. Hold on, everybody, hold on. Yeah. Man must be free to accept God or to reject God. Now, I do want you to write down Acts 17, 26 through 28, and I want you to look at that. What I did was, I changed my slides around and I didn't tell Larry. So, Larry, if I go back and forth, you guys will be happy about it. Now, has anybody ever brought this issue up before? Romans chapter 9. Everybody turn to Romans chapter 9. I know this is a little tedious, but I want everybody to stick with me. So this issue comes up when the Roman church, in the church at Rome, and they like the idea of grace, they like the idea of all these things, and Paul has to address it. Because they say, verse 19, one of you will say to me, then why does God still blame us? For who resists His will? If I have free will, and if God knows what I'm going to do anyway, and I choose the wrong thing, why does God blame me? Because He knew what I was going to do. Did I not have the ability? Why did I have the ability to reject that? Why didn't I just not do what God wanted me to do? So if I sin, why am I getting blamed for that if God knew I was going to do it anyway? You ever asked that question before? And that's what they were wanting to know. Why am I being held responsible if God knew I was going to do it in the first place? Okay? Here's the answer that we're just going to say quickly. God knows all the choices you are going to freely make. I want you to write that down. I want you to think about that one. God knows all the choices that I am going to freely choose to make. Say, well, I don't understand how all that works together. Here's the answer. I do not either. I have no idea how all that works. But I do know that God is God, that He's put me in a place where I can choose to accept Him or reject Him. And God knows the choices that I am freely going to make. I still have my free will. He's still God. In fact, it goes on to say here, he talks about the potter and the clay and all that sort of stuff. And basically saying, so when God does this, who are you to say, well, God, why'd you make me like this? And God basically says, that falls under the category of none of your business. God says, I know, but I'm not going to tell you. So we have the freedom of will, okay? Now, hold on just a second here, because I want to skip through some of this. So I'll jump to next. Let's just jump. I think we can jump on to the next one. Nope. Okay. Let's just kind of close this out, and then we'll talk about the ideal environment. Freedom must be available for an Auschwitz or an Ellis Island for the Jewish people. The world's going to be truly free, then men have to have the freedom for an Auschwitz, which is what Hitler did, right? Freedom to Holocaust. But there also has to be a freedom for an Ellis Island. How many of y'all have ever been to Ellis Island? Who's been to Ellis Island? I went there this summer. Ellis Island was for all the immigrants who were coming through New York City. They came in through Ellis Island into the port there, and they were processed to America. A lot of those people who came through Ellis Island in the 1870s, I think, started all the way through the early 1900s, were Jewish. Contrary to what Hitler did with Jews and putting them in gas chambers and killing them, is the people in New York City opened up their hearts to all these immigrants. They not only processed them, which is what we know about, across on the other side of the bay that separates Ellis Island from where the hospitals and the schools and the training centers and the places where they got free 3 meals a day for as long as they needed to stay there is where all those Jewish people and all the other immigrants were taken care of. And if you ever go or just read about it, it's an amazing thing how that if people were sick, they were put in the hospital until they got well. And it was all free. They didn't have anything to eat. They were fed every day, 3 meals a day. It's all free. If they needed to learn how to read, it was all free. And what that tells you is, I think that is the best that men can be. The men have to be free, they have to be their very best, but they also have the freedom to be their very worst. Okay? So I just want you to think about that. Because we sometimes get confused about God. God's saying, I'm going to give you freedom, but I'm going to give you freedom to be your very best or to be your very worst. Okay. Now, one thing, we'll skip over a couple things here, because I want to talk about this last thing, and this I will have time to talk about. We may have to circle back to some of this before we're all over with. The second thing about after freedom of will is this. Is that God created an ideal world. God created an ideal world for its purpose. You say, well, what about all these things going on? All the suicide bombers and the guy up in Dalton trying to kill those people that then killed himself. What about that little boy who was kidnapped? Did y'all read that in the paper about the little boy's kidnapped and his grandfather's involved in that drug cartel and they took the little boy kind of to... Did y'all see that in the paper? It's been terrible. They found the little boy this morning, by the way. Safe and sound. Which is, yeah, really cool. We see all these things and we hear about leukemia and children being in hospitals. And here in Atlanta, we hear all about the world should have been made better. The world is the ideal environment for why it was created. It was created as a veil for soul making. The world was created the way it was for soul making. Write that down. It was created for soul making. That's why God made it. We think the world should have been a hedonistic paradise. You know what I mean? We think water should never be polluted. No one should ever get angry. Everybody should live in the South and be nice. That's what we think. That's a hedonistic paradise. That wasn't why the world was created. The earth is the best possible world for why it was created. Now, let's see if I can find... Look in 2 Corinthians 4, 16 through 18, and we will wrap it up with this. We may finish this up next week and then do part of our film next week. Is that okay? Because I got a bunch of stuff here I didn't get to talk about today. But I want you to remember that. First of all, man is free. Man is free to be as good as he can be, to be as bad as he can be. And God is all-powerful, all-loving, and all-knowing. And that's the only way he can make man. The second thing is, the world is ideal for why it was created. God is all-powerful. God is all-loving. God is all-knowing. And he made the ideal world for why it was created. 2 Corinthians 4, 16 through 18. We'll close with this. It says, therefore we do not lose heart. Though outwardly we are wasting away, yet inwardly we are being renewed day by day. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but what is unseen. For what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. And I think what happens with all of us, is we think the world is supposed to be this perfect little place where nothing goes wrong. And when things go wrong, we think God screwed it up somehow. That's not what the world is meant for. The world is meant for a place where people can be challenged, where they can see the brevity of life, where they can see disappointment, where they can feel fear and anxiety. We're supposed to feel all those things to create faith in us so that we'll look forward to a place where those things do not exist. And that is heaven. Okay? And that's where the confusion comes. And I understand it. We all feel that way at times. But we've got to realize the world is ideal. God meant for earthquakes to happen. That was not a screw up on God's part. God, in His eternal plan, knew Adolf Hitler was going to be born and fail as a postal carrier and be a crummy sergeant or corporal in the Nazi army and start all that stuff. He knew all that was going to happen. God knew that bomber was going to walk into that law office in Dalton, Georgia on Friday morning and try and blow up the law office and injure all those people, end up just killing himself. He knew all that was going to happen. Sometimes we know why God allows those things, sometimes we don't. But we can know that God did it because He wants this world to be the ideal place for preparing our souls for heaven. And if you get that piece of it, the puzzle, you will understand the problem of human suffering much more than you ever dreamed. But until you get that piece, it will not make sense. So what we're going to start on next week, we'll wrap this up, talk about God being all-powerful and all-loving and all-knowing, and hopefully, Lord willing, the creek don't rise. we'll start the film next week. Okay?